from GPB News, this is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. If you've been ordered to evacuate because of the hurricane, please go somewhere safe.
But in my case, thank God, my brother-in-law, he was watching the situation, and he called and said, y'all better come on. My spirit told me to get your clothes and get out of here. When I look back at it, I see that when you don't take heed to warnings, you will suffer. But when you take heed to warnings, then you'll be a blessing to yourself.
That's Reverend E. Leroy Brown of Dallas, Georgia. He evacuated New Orleans ahead of Hurricane Katrina in 2005. We'll talk more about how to prepare for a hurricane in just a minute. Also, the Break Room Gang talks about what they'd save from the storm, bad dates, and fake service dogs. That's all ahead. First, we've talked a lot about food this week, from Southern tables to the White House kitchen. Soul food historian Adrian Miller told us about LBJ's personal cook, Zephyr Bright.
And the ways that she was an advocate for civil rights is that she was often doing as much cooking as the White House executive chef. So when they fired the White House executive chef, a French guy named René Verdon, she asked for to be paid the same wages, and she got it.
We asked you about your favorite Southern food, and here are your first thoughts. Regina McDuffie of Oglethorpe, Georgia, has this recommendation for a restaurant near where she lives.
In Montezuma, Georgia, there's a restaurant called Josie's, and they have the best soul food almost in the world. Best banana pudding you can find anywhere. So I would suggest you take a trip south and come to Josie's.
That sounds good. We also heard from James Locke of Enterprise, Alabama.
I had an affinity for fried chicken gizzards. When I got here, you couldn't find them less than 50 cents a piece. So every time I go down south, Elba, Alabama, I get a box or a pound of gizzards and satisfy my hunger for that culinary appreciation.
We also talked about the history of barbecue and sweet tea. Sam Burnham tweets, quote, barbecue is government political, fried chicken is church political, barbecue for stump speeches, chicken for pastor visits, end quote. We always love to get your comments and thoughts and recommendations. You can call us at 404-500-9457 and leave a message like Regina and James, or find us on social media. And remember, we might feature your comments on the show. Hurricane Irma is expected to hit Florida later today and then work its way north. The monster hurricane is one of the strongest ever recorded in the Atlantic and appears to be the largest ever in recorded history. So far, 18 people have died in the Caribbean. In Georgia, Governor Nathan Deal has declared a state of emergency for 30 counties. Most of the coast is under mandatory evacuation orders. Joining us now is John Knox, professor of geology and meteorology at the University of Georgia. Hi, John.
Hi.
Let's start with some basics. Can you tell me the difference between a there's three levels. There's warning, watch, and statement of a hurricane. What is the difference?
Right. A hurricane watch means that you can have hurricane conditions in an area up to about 48 hours in advance. A hurricane warning means conditions are expected within probably the next 24 to 36 hours. And hurricane conditions mean winds of, say, 75 miles an hour sustained or greater.
So Irma was downgraded from a Category 5 to a Category 4. I should mention there's a lot of misinformation going out over the internet. There is no such thing as a Category 6 hurricane. But
that's correct.
Hurricane Irma was downgraded from 5 to 4. What does that mean?
Not much. Hurricane Irma has already set a record for the longest period of top-level Category 5 hurricane in the Atlantic, Caribbean, or Gulf that we've seen since, say, 1950, 1960. What it's doing right now is it's reorganizing just a little bit, and its winds came down just enough to be out of Category 5 into a strong Category 4. The difference between those two is not a lot in terms of the damage, however. And all along, the forecast has been for Irma to stay between about Category 4 and Category 5 from here until it hits the Florida coast sometime on Sunday.
So, you know, we now have coming out of out of NOAA that they say no storm on record anywhere on the globe has maintained winds 185 miles per hour or above for as long as Irma has. I assume that's what you were just referring to. How significant
That's right.
is that?
It means that this is an extremely powerful storm. It's also a large storm, and it's forecast to get bigger in size as it gets closer to Florida and then goes up the Florida Peninsula. So that means that the area of damage is going to be extensive, assuming that the forecasts hold.
And that also means that the area of evacuation has to be much broader. I mean, just
That's
the
right.
area of where people are in danger.
That's right. The number of people that are at risk from Irma includes most of the population of Florida and then the population of much of Georgia, honestly, at somewhat lesser risk, but not zero risk. That's a lot of people. That's tens of millions of people.
So, okay, so why is it so difficult? Or let me put it another way. How accurate are we now in predicting the movement of a hurricane and which way it will turn?
I'll give you a little historical perspective. In 1900, a hurricane hit Galveston, Texas. It was not known the hurricane was going to hit Galveston till it hit Galveston. There was zero warning, and up to 12,000 people died in Galveston. It changed American history, basically. Today, we have about a week's worth of notice, thanks to supercomputers, thanks to information gathering from satellite, thanks to cadres of meteorologists that devote their lives to this. So last Sunday night, we knew that Irma would be a powerful hurricane just southeast or on the coast of southeast Florida on Sunday, a week ahead. So we've had great notice of that. And so the big picture is that our forecasting ability in terms of the track of hurricanes is, it's like science fiction. It's so good now.
All right. So let's actually hear from one evacuee. Let's take a listen to her comments.
My name is Sarah Landman, and I'm from Naples, Florida. Yeah, we evacuated 2 days ago, just ahead of the storm, just knowing that it was going to be crazy getting out of Florida. So we planned ahead and booked a hotel in Gainesville for a night, and we've been in Atlanta for a night. And we're just kind of watching to see what it does, and we'll either go a little bit north or we'll keep going north to stay with family for a while.
John, what would you say to the, we have about a minute left, but what would you say to people who at this point may be in the hurricane's path or are thinking, wait, we'll wait and see?
If they're in South Florida, they should probably get out. The winds are going to be well over 100 miles an hour in gusts. In some places, it will be sustained winds well over 100 miles an hour. The level of damage will be beyond anything that they've experienced unless they were in ground zero of Hurricane Andrew. So if they're down there, they need to get out. But we also need to talk about the impacts that are going to come all the way to possibly Atlanta.
That is John Knox. He is a professor of geology and meteorology at the University of Georgia. John, thank you very much. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. It has been a long week. We went ghost hunting in Rome, and then we peeked into the White House kitchen. Now, as we do every Friday, it is time to gather a group of smart people together and then kick back, unwind, breathe a little, and think about what the heck happened this week. It's time for the break room.
I have a great heart for the folks we're talking about, a great love for them. And people think in terms of children, but they're really young adults.
If there's a distraction that he wants, he'll pull. That does not help my disability whatsoever.
Have you given any thought to who you might be voting for?
I'm not sure yet. I definitely won't listen to what Simon says. He is just so mean. I usually always agree with Paula and Randy.
Joining us in the break room, Kathy Lohr is a journalist, former NPR correspondent. Hector Fernandez teaches in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. And Amy Condon is a freelance writer and founder of the Refinery Writing Studio. Welcome to Friday, everyone.
Good morning.
Has everyone battened down the hatches, especially you down there in Savannah, Amy?
Yeah, we've been putting up plywood the past couple of days for the windows and getting all... like our non-perishables all gathered, all that good stuff.
Well, I should remind people, make sure your pets obviously are safe during whatever storm weather is coming. Yeah. And since we're talking about pets, let's start with this first topic, which is about service dogs. We seem to be seeing them everywhere these days, but are our eyes deceiving us?
There's people that have been bitten in stores. Dogs have had, you know, accidents in stores or just been generally disruptive. I would say that I understand people's desire to have their dog with them, and they don't think it's a big deal, just as people park in handicapped spots and they think it's not a big deal.
There is some trouble over fake service dogs. It turns out there are a number of people who simply buy vests for their dogs and put them on their pets and then take those pets everywhere. And that can cause a lot of problems because real service dogs are very carefully trained. So some states like Florida are actually passing laws that fine you. It can be a misdemeanor if you use a fake service animal. What do you think we should do about this?
I don't know what we should do, but a service dog and an emotional support animal, which is what the other category is, are not the same thing. And right. I have seen a lot of these dogs untrained barking at the airports. And I'm like, this is not with a service vest on. So people are definitely scamming the system. I'm not sure a misdemeanor is going to stop them, though.
I'm all for the penalty. I think it should be high. The fact that a pet comforts you doesn't give you a license, you know, to hinder somebody else's need, right. actual need of the service of the dog. It impacts badly on that. And people have to understand that their liberty ends where somebody else's liberty starts. People have to be more considerate. So if you're into doing this, sure, you should pay a fine.
What do you think, Amy? In Florida, the it's punishable by a $500 fine and up to 60 days in jail.
Ooh, well, that's
what do you
a
think?
Good fine.
Well, it needs to be punitive so that people will not try to scam the system. If it's not punitive in a way that's meaningful, then it's not going to stop people from doing it. Because the service dogs definitely go through so much training.
They do.
And they're so important to people with, like, PTSD, especially in crowd situations, or people even that experience seizures and things like that, the dogs can let them know it's about to happen.
Yes.
So these things are very important. These types of pets are very important.
Well, then let's talk about maybe another form of punishment. Last month, a Cobb County police officer pulled a woman over for a traffic stop. She told she was nervous and scared, and he reassured her by saying this.
But you're not black. Remember, we only kill black people. Yeah, we only kill black people, right? All the videos you've seen, have you seen any black people get killed? You have.
In case you couldn't hear that, that's from his camera. That's Officer Greg Abbott saying, remember, we only kill black people. We only kill black people, right? He has now retired under a great deal of pressure. Do we think that was the appropriate solution?
This is so, so, so unprofessional. You know, at the police academy, if they teach recruits anything, is that at the actual moment of a pullover or any sort of exchange with the public, language has to be clear, direct, and respectful.
He says he was just joking to try and...
It is not a moment for irony or a joke or bad humor, because that's really bad humor.
Right.
I mean, this guy has done a disservice to the institution. He's not worthy of the uniform. He shouldn't have just retired. He should have been fired.
Well, he was fired, and then he retired. You know, I mean, so I don't really know how that happened, but they allowed him to retire, which was, I think, the wrong decision, especially for Cobb County, which has this reputation.
Well, maybe they wanted him to keep his pension. Amy, you're trying to jump in here.
Well, no, I got confused by the story at first, because at first I thought it said he was fired, but then he was allowed to retire. Mm-hmm. And I figured that was around a pension thing. But also, I mean, he has really done a disservice to the badge.
I mean, and he has a pension. I mean, do taxpayers actually want to be, you know, footing the bill for a guy who has behaved like this?
Well, and especially in today's racial climate, you just don't. I mean, I can't believe that an officer would say this. And if someone pulled me over and said this, I would call 911 and say, you have a fake cop.
Oh.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, I would.
Sure.
I mean, someone's pulling me over and making.
I mean, this is out of line. This is at any moment. But with the events that we've had recently, even more so.
Right. Right.
You know.
Exactly.
Well, so we all agree on that.
Yeah, I guess we all agree on that. Well, you're about to say something else, Amy?
Well, you know, he says that he was joking, or there was nothing in his, not that that would excuse anything. I don't mean it that way. But I listened to that recording like three or four times, I was going, there's nothing even smacking of irony or joke in there.
Yeah, and I don't think it would reassure me. In any case,
no,
it is Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. Just ahead, we're going to talk about what the end of DACA could mean for Georgia. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. We're having some coffee and some conversation in the break room. My guest today, Amy Condon, is down in Savannah, a freelance writer, founder of the Refinery Writing Studio. Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, and Hector Fernandez is a professor at Georgia State University. We spoke a moment ago about fake service dogs and got this tweet from Todd Rehm, who says, "Big problem with untrained animals that injure real service animals upon which disabled people rely 24/7. You know, if you have an opinion about fake service dogs or anything else, you know how to reach us. You can call and leave a message at 404-500-9457 or on social media. Okay, so earlier this week, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced the end of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Program, or DACA.
To have a lawful system of immigration that serves the national interest, we cannot admit everyone who would like to come here. It's just that simple.
President Trump says Congress should be the ones to pass immigration reform and has given him a six-month deadline. He says it's not the responsibility of the executive branch. Do you agree? Is this Congress's job?
Not at all. I mean,
it's not Congress's job.
No, no. Well, the president should have done something about it. I mean, obviously, Congress needs to implement, you know, successful immigration reform. But this is not the way to address it. I mean, the president shouldn't be playing ping pong with people's lives to get better ratings for his reality show. You know, that's just not the way it works.
Did you just refer to his presidency as his reality show?
Well, that's what he thinks it is.
Well, he made these promises to crack down on illegal immigration, and he's trying to make good on those promises for his supporters. But to me, it's clear that he has no idea who this group of people is and how productive they are, and that these are students that have been here their whole life. Most of these people have been there since they've been children, young children. They're trying to get an education. They're working. These are not criminals. And so why pick this arbitrary six-month date to force Congress into doing something? I don't get it.
Amy?
I agree. I feel like this group of people is being used sort of as a pawn to force an issue rather than why not ask Congress, don't do anything to the Dreamers, but ask Congress, give them a deadline and say, here, let's work toward this so that we can create paths. And don't forget about this group of the Dreamers that need a very specific path in here. Because this is a different group.
He could have presented a proposal to Congress. That would be another
option. Exactly. I mean, this is what leadership is. Leadership is not punting and then holding other people accountable.
Leadership is not being mean.
Exactly. That's why the use of compassionate end to this lawlessness. I think that was Jeff Sessions' quote. And I was going, compassionate end to lawlessness of people who've been here contributing to our communities for 20 years?
Yeah. Well, and then he was asked about this deadline, and he tweeted yesterday that over the next 6 months, this group has, you know, quote, nothing to worry about as far as being detained or deported. Like, that is a reassurance.
It's a good point. Since we're talking about worry, let me ask you, everyone is pretty stressed at the moment. I get that. There are many good reasons for that. We've got North Korea. Have you forgotten? White supremacy, violence, hurricanes literally coming and going. There is a great deal of things to worry about. So what is it? What is it that you are most worried? What's keeping you up at night? Amy?
Immediately, it would be Irma because we have to make decisions. But as I was driving here, I was listening to the breach on the Equifax thing and that there could be somebody out there with the cybersecurity hack.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that they've known about it for quite some time, since May, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm going, okay, so somebody out there quite possibly has all my information and not in a good way.
Yeah. That's upsetting.
Yeah, so I was like, that could have real, you know, identity theft kind of and financial ramifications.
Two-party verification, that's all I'm going to say. Kathy, what is keeping you up at night?
Well, I also have to say it's Irma because I have my niece and her husband are riding out the storm in Miami.
Oh, goodness.
I know. And I'm worried about them. I would have liked them to come up here. Also, I just moved into a new home, so I have boxes stacked up everywhere, and I want to unpack.
Forget nuclear war. She's got to unpack.
Look, I don't want to lessen Irma because I have my sister's in Miami, and for some obtuse reason, she's refusing to leave the place.
I know. I don't get that.
But I mean, family and friends doing the same.
For me, it's North Korea by far. I mean, this yo-yo game of you know, umping, you know, increasing the ante and saying every time more and more outrageous things. Sooner in diplomacy, words have relevance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. when you keep on you know, pitching a discourse of belligerence and of aggressiveness, sooner or later it comes back and bites you in the butt. And they're playing with nuclear weapons. I mean, they're playing with nuclear weapons. And if somebody does something, somebody else is going to have to counteract. And that's not a fun game. It could have implications on everybody, not just South Florida, not just Georgia, not just the USA, everybody.
All right. So since two of you are worried most about Irma, let's do a quick lightning round here because Amy's getting ready to leave Savannah. So let's talk about it. If you had to evacuate your home, what do you take with you?
Yourself, your pet or pets, and photos if you have them packed up. That's it. Because I have seen
most of them are on your phone, right?
What? Yeah. Well, yeah. Now, but I mean, people have their photos from
albums.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, I've covered so many hurricanes, including Andrew 25 years ago. And
yeah, this is bigger.
Yeah. Right.
Amy, you're actually getting ready to do this. What do you take with you?
Yeah. It's been an interesting exercise to go, what is important enough to me? So I've got important papers, some special heirloom jewelry, not much. My family, my pets. My mother-in-law is up here from Miami with us so that we can all be together. And photos, but there's recipes that are handwritten by my grandmother.
Yeah.
I put those in a binder and a little plastic bag so that I wouldn't lose those because that's the only handwriting of hers that I have, and I still cook from those.
Hector, you got about 15 seconds. What do you take with
you? My son will obviously be with me. Right now, the way things are, my certificate of naturalization, because these are not good times for Latinos.
There you go.
Good idea.
So just a reminder, GPB
that's
is
very smart.
GPB will live stream Governor Nathan Deal's press conference regarding Irma just after this show. It is Friday. We're hanging out in the break room. Coming up, bad dates. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. We continue our conversation and in the break room, my guest today, Hector Fernandez of Georgia State University, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, and down in Savannah for the moment is Amy Condon, founder of the Refinery Writing Studio. All right, so let's get personal here. Have you ever been on a truly terrible date?
I'm out of stuff to say, so I think I'll probably head out.
Okay, well, that was a really fun 5 minutes. I think I'll just grab these drinks then.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right. That's from Master of None. That's a great show. Okay.
Oh, I love that show.
Earlier this week, there was a story involving a Tinder date gone really, really wrong. A poor woman clogged the toilet at her date's house. Then she tried to fix that problem, and it got so much worse. It is a very gross story, so I'm not going to tell the rest of it. But has anybody here had a really nightmare date?
Not something as bad as this one. I mean,
I don't think anybody's.
It was really gross. And for one, for the record, I would have doubts about dating this woman again, given her behavior. In any case, the worst I've had was when I was in college. I mean, we went out for a play. We went to see a play, and afterwards we had a party. By the time the play finished, it was pretty obvious things were not working very well. So as soon as we arrived to the party, we parted ways.
I see. Okay, that's not so bad. Amy?
I have had two. One was my very first date ever. And,
oh, no.
Oh, God.
And I was like, oh, my God, we're going to go to a movie and dinner. And so he takes me. So I think I'm 16, and he takes me to see Stephen King's Christine, which I wasn't a horror movie person.
Yeah.
But then afterwards, while we're having dinner, proceeds to tell me he's a member of the occult and is really fascinated by dark magic. And all I can think while I'm sitting there is like, I'm the sacrifice. I'm the sacrifice. And then another one where my mother set me up on a blind date.
That's a bad idea from the get-go.
Both parts of that. Mother set me up and blind date. Yeah. Those are both
She met this guy and thought he was just adorable. He brings out his photo album of his ex-wife.
Oh, God.
During the date.
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. Okay. Well, I want to say, too, also, I went on a first date with a guy, and we had appetizers and, you know, a drink, and during the day, during the hour we're sitting there, he said to me, I just can't wait to introduce you to my parents.
Oh, God.
Oh, my.
At which point
first
I was.
Hour.
Yeah.
All right.
And I'm like, okay. I think. And he's like, I want to get married. And yeah, exactly. I'm like, you've met the wrong person. This was Obama. And then the second one, which is also very, it's kind of funny, weird, but. We sat down, also those appetizer things or whatever, and I put my feet up on the bench. I was really tired. I had been working all day. And he said, oh, I'm really happy to meet you. You have nice feet.
Oh, boy.
And
okay.
I went, okay.
We definitely need to get these bad date stories from listeners as well. Take a break
what
from Hurricane.
What about you, Celeste?
Not even going into that.
Come on.
You've got to share one.
404
she's turning red for the
500-9457 or find us on social media. All right, fine. I went on a date with somebody to go see Poltergeist. I was very, very, very young, and I get extremely scared at horror movies. And he went to go get popcorn, and then we're sitting there and watching the movie, and a really bad part came, and I jumped in his lap, and it was the wrong guy. He had not come back from popcorn.
Oh, no!
That was the most...
That's
yeah,
funny.
That was pretty bad.
That's awesome.
All right, moving on. New data from the New York Times finds that charter schools often don't do their job at educating any better than regular public schools. Many of them end up closing, and that often means that the surrounding communities are left with a pile of debt. What do we do about charter schools? Answer that, because we have 2 minutes. Solve it.
All right. Local districts should take them over, and they should pitch in. The federal government and the state government should pitch in, because they're the ones responsible for privatizing everything. And if Betsy DeVos records, you know, with Michigan, she's utterly destroyed the state educational system in Michigan, at least at the K-12 level. Is any proof of this? I mean, that's what we should do, because you should go back to public hands.
They don't have to meet the same standards as public schools. It seems very unfair. And they sap all this money out of the system. So I think it has to go back to some, I don't know what the exact solution is. It has to go to a fairer system.
Amy?
I agree. They have to be held to the same standards as public education. The bottom line is we need to be paying and training our teachers better, period, no matter what. And until we...
That's so nice.
We talk about education being the key to mobility and to a healthy democracy, everything. And yet we short shrift that in every way possible. And until we come to terms that that's one of the most profound professions that we have in this world, and we need to nurture it and fund it appropriately, you're not going to get to shortcut this.
Well, we have a lot of listeners who are teachers, so I'm sure
they would agree with you.
They're probably cheering right now, Amy, but we would love to get your thoughts on this, all of you out there listening. You know how to reach us on Twitter. It's at OST Talk, or find us on Facebook. We're out of time in the break room. I want to say thanks to all of my guests. Kathy Lohr is a former NPR correspondent. Hector Fernandez is a professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. And Amy Condon, freelance writer and founder of The Refinery Writing Studio. Thanks, guys.
Have a great weekend.
You.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Be safe, everybody.
Yeah, you too.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
And good luck on your book tour.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Have a wonderful time.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Well, to be spoken of later. That is our show for today. But I.